What's the situation look like for a regional lab based at ISU?
I think the prospects are really good. We've been in discussions with the Shield Illinois people at the University of Illinois, and we're planning to move forward with implementing their testing protocol on the campus. It is looking like it's probably 8 to 10 weeks away because of all the setup we have to do, and we have to do some hiring of staff as well.
How complex is the testing? What know-how and what supplies do you have to have?
So the testing itself is pretty straightforward. You know, you collect the saliva, and it gets heat inactivated, so you heat it in a water bath for a while, and then you extract, or you run it through the PCR instrument, which looks for the viral DNA or the viral RNA, I think. The testing process itself is pretty simple. It's the logistics of handling, several thousand samples a day, which requires some fairly sophisticated solution handling equipment, so that you make sure you track the samples all the way through the process. The other complication is that this is all regulated, right? So you have to have a CLIA certified lab. CLIA, I think, stands for Clinical Laboratory. I forget what the I is. but it's a certification process that the lab has to meet in order to produce diagnostic results. So that adds to the timing and the complexity of getting the lab up and going.
Biology and chemistry have pretty good faculty that bring in a ton of grant money. Are there labs already certified on at least a small scale?
No. So the CLIA certification is for doing diagnostic tests for medical purposes. So actually the Student Health Services has a CLIA certified lab for some techniques, but we don't have any chemistry or biology labs that meet the same certification requirements. We have a lot of the similar technologies, it's just that they're not meeting the clinical requirements that are required for diagnostic tests like this.
Where would ISU put this lab?
We were planning to locate it in the science lab building. We have a room identified that we hope will be suitable for the requirements of all the equipment. So we hope to be speccing that out next week and making sure that it will meet all the requirements.
What kind of space and staff size are you talking about?
Hopefully it'll just be one lab that is the size of a teaching lab, a lab large enough that would hold several workstations, probably 8 to 10 workstations. And we expect having 1 to 2 shifts of about 6 employees each shift doing the testing.
How much capacity would the lab have on a per day test number?
The goal is to get several thousand, so hopefully up to 10,000 per day. That's where the Shield Illinois program is shooting for their lab capacities.
The U of I is testing, 30,000 people a week or more than that even? What would ISU's target be, and how often do you test any particular student?
Yeah, so we're still having those discussions and looking at the model. We expect that we will offer the test at least once a week, depending on capacity and how we get up and running. We may go to two per week. That's still under discussion.
What's the difference between once a week or twice a week in the ability to contain an outbreak and identify people who have it and their immediate contacts?
Sure. Of course, the more often you do the testing, the quicker you'll catch outbreaks. The U of I model, they show that they get the best results with face coverings and with twice a week testing. One of the key things that's important about this saliva-based test is that the results can be produced much quicker. And so there's some discussion about whether that offsets the need for twice a week or whether we can get do once per week, because that's obviously a significant difference in cost, but we definitely want to do what's the safest for the community.
ISU would be a main customer for this lab. Would other community stakeholders also be customers?
Yes, that's the plan. Part of the Shield Illinois system is that different community partners would have access to the testing capabilities. And I think they have people that are reaching out to community organizations to see if they'll be interested in testing through our site.
Which organizations?
I'm not familiar with exactly who they've been talking to, but I assume it's the major employers and the other universities in town. That's that's one of the goals of the Shield program, is to make it available as widely as possible.
Retirement communities or nursing homes, extended care facilities that have to test their staff?
Yes, I'm sure that I would expect that they're reaching out to them as well.
So even at 10,000, it sounds like there will be enough demand to take up that capacity.
Yeah, that's the fortunate or unfortunate thing is that there is a lot of demand, and so, you know, the higher capacity we have, the more we can do to test and make sure that we do as much testing as possible throughout the community.
For lay people, how complex is this science?
For lay people, it's not terribly complex. You basically take saliva and you're looking for fragments of the virus and its genetic material, and this technique called PCR, polymerase chain reaction, is really amplifies if there's any of that copy of that genetic material present. It amplifies it many, many times and allows you to detect it with very high selectivity. So it's relatively simple, but it's also very precise and accurate as well.
Cornell has a test. Yale has a test. There's both saliva-based. Another place has something that would be similar to a pregnancy test, where you actually just spit on cardboard and it turns up, although that may not be quite ready for market. What are the differences in all of these?
Many of them are similar. So the saliva-based PCR-based test that Cornell and Yale have use a very similar technique to the U of I method. The advantage of us using that is that U of I has the system that they can share with us, and we can implement their system because they've done the study to say that it's equivalent to the Yale method. Much of the card tests are what are called antigen tests. So they're a type of test that detects some of the proteins in the virus, but not the genetic material. And so they can give you tend to give you quicker results. They're easier to use, but they're less specific, and so they're not confirmatory. Typically, if those turn positive, you have to back it up with one of these genetic methods.
The existing tests done out at the Interstate Center are about $100 a pop, and that's what ISU was contracted for with Reditus. Mm-hmm. President Dietz has said that the U of I tests are going to be about $2 a pop, but if you're running 10,000 up to 10,000 a day, that's still a pretty chunk of change. How's this going to be paid for?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So each of the communities, organizations that are going to run tests will have to pay for their tests. So so say if a long-term care facility wants to do some testing, they'll pay a per test amount that goes into the running of the lab. We as ISU will also have to pay a per test price. And so you're right, it gets, if we did everybody on campus twice a week, it gets very expensive, and you know, gets even more expensive than the Reditus testing we're doing right now. So, good question. How it'll be paid for? That's not my area. I'm the science.
How long has this been in development? I mean, were you waiting for the FDA to approve it for the U of I's broader use until you started, or have you started in parallel with the FDA process and just waiting for it, and now you have a running start?
So we've been in discussions with the University of Illinois for probably 3 weeks or three or four weeks. But yeah, with it being FDA approved, that really allows us to be doing diagnostic testing, so we can actually use the results to do tracking of the cases on campus. So we have been talking about it, and things are really moving now that they have the FDA approval.
Not to look a gift horse in the mouth, but why not start earlier with the hope that it would be FDA approved and you could be further down the road?
So one of the issues is the supply chain. So the machines and the supplies are very difficult to get. And so my understanding is that University of Illinois has been working on procuring those instruments, and there's basically a lag time from when you decide to do this to when you can actually get the equipment. So we've been kind of reliant on their procurement and their ability to shore up the supply chain for the process.
So the SHIELD program is going to divvy up the state in, what, 11 different regions and have labs in 11 different spots around the state, including ISU as one of those regions. Is there going to be cross-communication between those regional facilities and maybe sharing of capacity if it gets tight in one area?
I believe that's the plan, yeah, because the idea is to have a network that can deal with surges and requests or needs for outbreaks or for testing in certain areas.
What else do we need to know about this? Does the public need to know at this point?
Well, I think it's going to be really good to have faster turnaround times with this technique and more frequent testing. And from a science standpoint and from an educational standpoint, it's a kind of a good opportunity for some of our students to maybe some of our grad students to get some experience in a production testing lab where you're doing a lot of scientific tests, but for a community purpose that will hopefully help us, be able to track outbreaks and track cases a little bit more quickly and effectively.
Okay, so is a grad student hireable for these jobs, or what sort of technical capability and qualification do you need?
So the lead staff has to have certain certifications, but the testing personnel, they basically need a lab background. So some of our grad students could work in it, and some of our recent graduates could also work in the lab as well as some of the testing personnel.
How sensitive or not sensitive is this saliva test compared to the swab up your nasal passage that had been in the most common kind?
Yeah, I was just looking at that, and the U of I claims that their method is a little bit more sensitive, and obviously with the easier sample collection, it's more it's quicker and it's less invasive, and so it's the combination of the easier sampling and the better sensitivity actually makes it a really attractive
test. So if it's more sensitive, does that mean false positives are more likely?
It shouldn't be, because if you have any of the viral genetic material in your saliva, it should be able to detect it. That of course assumes that if you have the genetic material in your saliva, it's coming from an infection.
You're not supposed to eat or drink for an hour before spitting into the tube. Is that a limitation or a requirement to get an accurate test?
It sounds like it is. I've just been reading some articles about that there have been some invalid results by some people at the University of Illinois campus, and they're attributing it to things that they've recently eaten or that they ate or drank too soon before taking the test. So, yeah, I think one of the advantages that we'll have by starting this a little bit later is that we'll learn from their issues and the issues they come across, and so hopefully we'll be able to anticipate some of that and make the sample collection and the logistics of the whole process a little smoother once we get going here.
All right.
I don't know if you can tell, but I'm actually excited about setting up the lab. I think it's going to be it'll be good for the community, but also a great scientific addition to the campus.
Okay. Well, that raises a question, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
So presuming that the pandemic eventually gets dealt with, what happens to the lab space and the capacity and capability that you've built? Are there other uses that are helpful to the academic mission of the university?
Yes, definitely. If we are able to, so hopefully COVID goes away or we don't need to do this testing, you know, after a certain period of time, but we would have the capacity to do some pretty high throughput sort of genetic screening and genetic sequencing type of experiments that we don't have the capability to do right now. Our current PCR machine can do 96 samples at a time, and we're talking about getting several that can do 384 at a time, and so there's a lot of things that biology and chemistry will be able to do that we currently can't do.
Do you know the price tag to set up this capacity?
I think the cost is going to be close to $1 million, and that's part of the business model that U of I is working out, so that the cost pays for the all the supplies for the testing.
Okay, and then you get to keep the machines afterwards then.
I'm not 100% sure on that. We're still, that's what I understand, but I wouldn't want to be quoted on for sure that that's what will happen.
Okay.
I think that's still under discussion, but we're hoping that we can retain them.